It's episode 10 of the Canes Cast with a little bit of a hiatus.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, how are you doing, Michael Smith?
I'm good. How are you?
You've grown since last I've seen you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I didn't think I had grown since I was probably in high school.
It could just be the fact that we're in a new location for Canes Cast, and as we mentioned, this is episode 10. I went with an X-Men theme on this one, Days of Future Past, but we could go wherever you want because we are now past the naming it from Star Wars, which people are very excited about. But what I'm more excited about, the upcoming regular season for the Carolina Hurricanes, Michael. At the recording of this edition of the Canes Cast, we already have 3 preseason games down. We have 4 more to go, including a West Coast swing-ish for the Carolina Hurricanes as they take on Edmonton twice. But let's start with where you were and a reason why we were on hiatus for a little bit for the Canes Cast.
Yep.
You were in Traverse City, where the prospect tournament goes on. The Canes were expected to be the favorites. They had a third place finish, but I don't think that that's anything to hang your head about when you consider there were some pretty good performances. You were there, you got to see it all. We got to stream some of the action that was there, but yeah. What stood out to you from Traverse City?
Yeah, I think it was all around when you look at the week, it has to be considered a success. I mean, even though the Hurricanes didn't capture back-to-back championships, they still finished the tournament 3-1. They're, what does that add up to, 7-1, I guess, in the last 2 years at that tournament. And that's a really good tournament. It's competitive. There are a lot of good young players. And the way the Hurricanes handled themselves throughout the majority of the tournament is a great sign for things to come. I liked a number of things. I think we'll go through a few players here. I think Martin Natchez, who we talked about, you know, before going up there, interested to see what he could do in a game situation. And we've seen it here in the preseason, and the kid can just fly. I mean, he hits open ice, and he's just fun to watch. And he actually, you know, talking to him about, you know, going from the bigger rink to the smaller rink, and he says he actually might prefer the smaller rink because you make a move and you're set up for a big play, whereas on the bigger rink, that takes a lot longer to develop. So I was really impressed with him. The goaltending, with the exception of that Chicago game, which really, you know, that the whole team didn't play well that game. So from top to bottom, that game wasn't anything to write home about. But the goaltending in the other games was very impressive. Callum Booth, Jeremy Helvig handling themselves very well. I thought Jake Bean might have been the team's best defenseman. He made a few plays that, you know, a lot of scouts come to these games and not only Hurricane scouts but other team scouts just to get a read on what everybody has. And he made a couple of plays that had scouts there really impressed with him. You know, he was good on the power play. He was good defensively, and he's taken a lot of strides in his development. So it was a really good week, I think, for the Hurricanes. Would have liked to see the championship, but can't be disappointed with a 3-1 finish.
No, you can't. And as mentioned, this team is now 7-1 in the last 2 years at that tourney. It's pretty good when you consider how many pro players have skated through there the last 10 years since the Traverse City Prospects Tournament has been going on. The other thing, too, as you mentioned, Marty Natchez, we're going to talk a little bit more about him, I think, coming up here on this edition of the Canes Cast. But as you said, 3-1, nothing to hang your head about. They come out with a third-place finish in the tournament, and a couple of guys, they really caught the eyes of the coaching staff, too, and I think that that's given somebody maybe a little bit longer look here as the Canes opened up training camp last week where things get really underway. And if we're going to go camping, let's do it. For me, let's go with a top story, though. Haven't seen Scott Darling yet. In the words of Bill Peters, he's a little banged up. I don't know if there's cause for concern or if this is just the fact that it's training camp and, you know, guys are going to press, especially Scott Darling, who we all anticipate is going to be the number one goaltender. We should see him on Saturday night against the Washington Capitals when the team hits the road.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like there's anything to be concerned about, really. Both him and Lee Stepniak, I think the team just wants to take it take precautionary measures there with both of them because you know both of them are making your opening night roster. So there's really no need to force them into preseason action other than just to get that timing, the rhythm, the hands, just to get back into game action. But there's no reason to force it. We do think, you know, all signs point to Scott Darling at least being available for Saturday's game in Washington. So you look at the three-game trip, the Washington, Edmonton, and then Saskatoon to, again, play the Oilers. Definitely should see Scott Darling at some point, if not at multiple points throughout the trip. So, yeah, I don't think anything to be concerned about. The Hurricanes have gotten looks at some of their goaltenders in the system. Alex Nedeljkovic has played very well here early on in the preseason, and it's kind of a big season for him because he didn't have, I don't think, the season that many, and probably including himself, thought he would have last year. Struggled at times in his first year pro. So this is a big season for him, and he's had a real good camp so far. But yeah, I think we see Darling soon, and maybe we even see Lee Stepniak later on in the preseason. But nothing to be too concerned about just yet. I think the Hurricanes are just playing it safe with both of those guys.
Let's go back to the goaltending for a second, though, Michael. Michael Smith, Mike Maniscalco here on the Canescast that you're tuning into on iTunes, Google Play, and Hurricanes.com, and we thank you for all of that.
And we should be weekly from here on out. I mean, you know, something might happen, but I think vacations are over.
Yeah, that's the plan. For now. Although next week you're going to be gone for a little bit.
Yeah.
I will not be with you on the road
but
to
we'll
Saskatoon.
Be, yeah, but we'll be back in your ears probably late
next
week.
Yeah, Thursday, Friday. Let's go to the goaltenders. And Scott Darling, Cam Ward have the NHL jobs locked up right now. I liked what I've seen out of Jeremy Smith, who's going to be in the AHL, a little veteran depth for this organization there. But two names. We've already talked about Callum Booth, and you mentioned Alex Nedeljkovic. If we're going to go by the organizational depth chart, I think that from what I've seen, maybe Callum Booth has jumped in front of Alex Nedeljkovic, like you mentioned, which has made this preseason even bigger for Ned to come in and be a guy who's like, no, I'm still got a little bit more veteran experience here, a little bit more pro experience. But I think this is also a big training camp for Callum Booth. And while we haven't seen him really that much when we can talk about game action, I like what I've seen out of him so far in the practices that they've had here.
Yeah, and he's been good when he's gotten into games. And that's a situation, too, where we know Jeremy Smith is going to be one of the goaltenders in Charlotte because he's going to be sort of the de facto third string, you know, there if anything happens to
Darling
or Ward.
He's Michael
Leighton.
He's Michael Leighton this year. That's what he is.
Exactly. So he's got one of the spots in Charlotte locked up, and then there's Nedeljkovic, there's Booth in play, and you kind of want both of them to play.
Yeah.
So one of them's going to end up probably snagging the starting job in Florida. And the ECHL is a very good league, very competitive, and that's going to be good for whoever winds up there because they're going to be the guy. They're going to be the one that is turned to on a night-to-night basis. And then for the other one, it's just a matter of bettering their game so they can challenge Jeremy Smith night in, night out for the starting role. So a good year for both of them. Callum Booth entering his first professional season and Nedeljkovic coming into his second. But important camps for both of them. You know, like we said, Nedeljkovic earlier looking to rebound and Booth just looking to get his footing as a professional. So they both seem game action, and they've both been impressive early on in the preseason.
And also, if you see in the transaction report this year that Booth and Nedeljkovic switch places between Charlotte and Florida, the Everblades, I wouldn't freak out over it because it's probably they just want to give somebody a run as a starting goaltender for a while and, you know, maybe a few AHL games here for the guy who starts off in Florida, see how he's there, but it's just one of the things that we're watching, one of the developments here for training camp.
And it's all about development, too. I mean, when you look at the AHL and the ECHL, they're developmental leagues. And we look at a guy like Hayden Fleury to shift gears just a bit. He's a guy who spent time in junior, spent the balance of the season in the AHL last year, did not, you know, earn a recall at any point. But in doing so, I think rounded his game into the form where he's come into training camp this year, Traverse City a few weeks ago and training camp now. And I think he's poised to maybe make that step to the NHL. So you look at what you know, spending time in these developmental leagues will do. It's just an important step in these guys' careers as they adjust to the professional life and sort of learn what has to happen on a night-in, night-out basis. And the Hurricanes have gotten to the point now where they have the luxury of being able to wait with some of their guys. Like with Hayden Fleury, they were able to, you know, let him spend a year in the minors before he's truly come and shown that he might be ready to make the jump. So it's good for the Hurricanes that they have that depth now. And it's something to keep an eye on as training camp moves forward as to who sticks around for a while and continues fighting for one of these jobs that are available.
Well, that's where Martin Natchez's name comes back up.
Right.
Because he has impressed the coaching staff. He's already played in two preseason games. I get the feeling we might see him play in at least two more before they make the decision to either let him go back to Europe and play in the Czech Republic. Maybe they can, if he is leaning towards playing in the OHL for Saginaw, or he stays here. And there's another option there as well, because he's a European player, Michael. He could be assigned to the Charlotte Checkers and play in the AHL this year. I don't know if they'd want to do that. Maybe they would, because of his age, be more comfortable with putting him at Saginaw. But this is a very good player. And for training camp, when you've got so many bodies out there in two practice sessions, it's really hard to say, well, this guy stands out. Oh, yeah, it's great. Natchez has stood out.
Yeah.
And I just think that he's one of those guys that he's going to make it a really tough decision on this organization in a good way. It goes back to competition and developing players, that he might be hanging around when that Washington home game is here to close out the preseason. He might be hanging around the organization, making it tough for Bill Peters and company to send him somewhere.
Yeah, and it's sort of like Sebastian Aho, who, you know, was drafted and ended up, you know, spending another year in Finland, and then shows up here, and it's, you know, whoa, this kid can really play. With Natchez, we're getting sort of a preview of what that skill is all about. But I think, like Aho, it might be beneficial for him to spend another year in the Czech League just refining his game. Now that he's come to a development camp, now that he's come to a prospects tournament and a training camp, he knows what's expected of him. He knows what he has to do. Now he can go back to the Czech League and play in a very good competitive league with men, you know, as we like to say, you know, versus
you give me some draft propaganda here.
Versus going to junior and playing against teenagers.
Michael Smith, he played against men this past year.
Yes.
That's why we've typed against other men. That's why we drafted him for the web.
Exactly. So I think it might be beneficial from that standpoint. But he's going to certainly make it tough. I think he's making it tougher than a lot of people anticipated, which is great. You know, that's kind of what you want to see from your 12th overall pick. Good things to come from him. I think he does stick around for a little while longer, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he spends another year in the Czech Republic just to refine his game and come back next year even stronger and even better.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, by the way, because you used the gold star example, Sebastian Aho. You know, there's nothing wrong with going over and playing overseas. And like you said, he's got the experience of this year, and then he can go back, get a little bit stronger, come back next year, and there'll probably be an opening for him on the roster. And he's just a smart player. So let's get to the games that we've seen. There was a game played here on Wednesday night against the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, Natchez had a couple of opportunities. His line had a couple of opportunities early on in that game. The first loss that the Canes took in the preseason, but two wins before that. And I don't want to try to read too much into stuff, Michael, because people love to do that. Oh, my God, team's 2-0. It's 2-0 in the preseason. Who'd you play against? But how they won the two games does stand out to me, even though it wasn't the roster we're going to see on October 7th when the Minnesota Wild are in town. But this was a game they won in overtime against the Buffalo Sabres. That's something that's new and refreshing, and we'd like to see a lot more of in the regular season.
After 15 overtime losses last year.
Yeah, that's something.
That's a lot of points left on the table, you know, when it comes down to it.
That is something to sneeze at, because, I mean, it gives you some allergies to losing when you're in the extra session. The other thing, they had to hold on for an entire third period in Tampa on Tuesday night and protect a 2-1 lead, which they did.
With a goaltender in Booth who came in relief. So he's cold. He comes in, and I think he immediately faced the Hurricanes were on the PK.
Yep.
So he's immediately tossed in and facing shots from you know, from the power play unit of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he handled himself. The team handled themselves very well.
All right, so what do you take out of it? Because you were on the road, you saw the Buffalo win, you saw the Tampa Bay win, and we both watched what happened the other night here against Tampa Bay, where, you know, some loose play, some guys who, and we're just being honest here on the Canes cast, some guys here who are not going to be here when the puck drops for real in the regular season. you know, you're trying to make an impression. Maybe you find yourself in a spot you shouldn't be. That puts somebody else in a bad spot. We saw some scrambly play from the Canes early on in that game.
And some guys just getting in their first game. And even, you know, if you've been a veteran of this league for a while, I mean, even that first game can be a little tough, just getting everything back where it needs to be, especially when you're playing against guys who have either played in the prospects tournament or played in a game or two to begin the regular season. There is something to be said about getting into game action early on just to get that feel back. So, yeah, last night I don't put too much stock into it. I think, you know, head coach Bill Peters said there are some things he liked, there are some things he didn't like. They'll clean up the things he didn't like. They'll take the things that they liked and sort of move forward with those. Individually, I think there were some good things. Hayden Fleury had a terrific game. I think really, if he wasn't already sort of penciled in as the sixth defenseman, I think he certainly made a definite case to maybe put his name in pen there with what he did in terms of stepping up for his teammate Derek Ryan, who was boarded. Fleury challenges Sorelli, who made the hit, gets the 10-minute misconduct because of the instigator, and that's a whole nother debate. But
I was going to ask you if you want to go there.
we'll leave that one where it should be for now.
I'm sorry. You're right. We'll leave it right there. But
we'll leave it
2-5-10 for defending a teammate, and 2-5 for nearly decapitating a guy along the boards, and 5 for fighting. But remember, because the children, it's too violent. All right, I'm done.
So we'll leave that there.
We'll leave it there.
And then in the third period, you know, he leaves his feet, hits the ice, and breaks up the 2-on-1. So really an impressive game from him last night in his second preseason game. And so those are the individual performances that you're kind of looking for in the preseason.
Well, what about his main competition, though, that I think for that spot outside of Klaus Dahlbeck, who is Trevor Carrick, 2 assists in the win in Tampa on the 2 goals.
And 1-for-1 in the faceoff circle.
That's right, because we're seeing guys getting tossed left and right now, and penalties if you don't get tossed.
What happened with there? You might have seen the photo on the front page of Hurricanes.com, but Trevor Carrick indeed took a faceoff in Tampa Bay, won the faceoff. The Hurricanes were on the 5-on-3 kill, and I believe it was Teravainen who got tossed out of the circle. So Trevor Carrick said he looked over at Klaus Dahlbeck, and Dahlbeck sort of shook him off, so he skated into the circle. He said the opposite center sort of whiffed at the puck and missed it, so he just cleaned it up. And head coach Bill Peters called him a specialist. So, you know, it's the Hurricanes have that going for him, and Trevor Carrick has that going for him should he ever need to step into the faceoff circle. But
I like the fact that there is that competition for the spot. Maybe Hayden Fleury took that step forward with the performance at the PNC Arena against Tampa. Maybe he gets the lead, but I want to see that go all the way down to the final preseason game. I think both guys are going to make it a tough decision on the coaching staff for who's going to be the 6-7 defenseman on the team this year.
Yeah, and Carrick has a couple years professional under his belt, so he's been there. He's itching. He's motivated. He got a couple of games.
Use the Bill Peters word. He's hungry.
He's hungry. He got a couple of games up with the Hurricanes in the 2015-16 season, and that's sort of motivated him to want to get back here full time. He's spent his time with Charlotte in the American League, and I think he's ready as a player to make that jump. But he does have competition, like you mentioned, with Fleury, with Klaus Dahlbeck. But it's a situation there where even if he is sent back to Charlotte, he knows he's that much closer to either earning himself a recall or potentially staying here for an extended period of time.
Yeah, and I think that, again, competition throughout the system, throughout the team, it's only a good thing. We're sitting here talking about, Michael really did a good job of laying out why Hayden Fleury has the inside track. But I like the fact that I can do, what about this guy? And I know the coaching staff likes it too. They want some tough decisions on what to do with these roster spots. Now, overall, what do we read out of this preseason? Because all the penalties, Michael Smith.
All of the penalties. I think I just...
We just got 2 minutes for slashing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to make that same joke. So the penalties in the preseason, I think it happens every season to some degree, but this season seems to have it taken a step forward. And there's a couple reasons for that. One important thing to note, with both slashing and the faceoff violations, They're not rule changes. They're just they're looking at the rule book and calling it as it should be called.
Yeah.
So it's not that the rule has changed. It's not that you know, you used to be able to do something and now you can't. It's just
we're
that
really never able to slash a guy on the hands.
Right. They just let that go for one reason or another. Now that's getting called. So what you're seeing in these first couple of games, especially guys who are playing their first games, they haven't yet played a game where it's been called to that standard. Last night, I thought you saw, you know, both teams had played at least one preseason game. So I think what you saw were guys starting to adjust and say, okay, well, I used to be able to just two-hand a guy, you know, right across his hands. Maybe last night they hold up a little bit more. With face-offs, it's going to be an ongoing challenge to sort of figure out what you can get away with and what you can't. It's clamping down on what the rule book says. It's nothing more than that. It has been sort of frustrating to watch just from the standpoint that there's not a lot of flow to the game. Yeah. There's not a lot of five-on-five time for coaches to be able to properly evaluate their young players. But it's a learning process. It's a learning process for the players, for the coaches, and for the officials on what should and shouldn't be called. So I think, and Peter said it the other day, is once this this level of communication is established, once you sort of set the standard, it's going to be better. It's going to be better for the league once everybody understands what's okay and what isn't.
All right. Well, let's run down. We got the time. We're going to run down for the fans right now who are listening in the Canescast. These are the rule changes / stricter enforcement that's coming this way. One of the reasons why the Canescast was on hiatus was I had a few days out of town, so got to find out what the rule changes were. Diving and embellishment is going to be called more strictly this year. Haven't really seen that
not yet.
Preseason because of the slashing, but they vow that they're going to call that a lot closer to what it should be and probably more. Rule number 87, this one's changed. Chuck Caton has described this, which is on the timeout. No timeout will be given to a defensive team following an icing. So that's going to play, I think that's going to play pretty big, especially when we're talking about a one-goal lead in the second period and you've got a team that's just dead tired that's out there, that they've been hemmed in for a shift, coach can't call a timeout, you better hope that Trevor Carrick can win the draw
right.
And you get it to safety.
Or late in the game, too, if you're down, you know, 6-on-5 disadvantage, the other team has their goalie pulled, you ice the puck, that's usually a situation where the coach, you know, hammers the timeout, you go over what the play is going to be, defensively off the draw. That certainly is going to factor into games in a small but noticeable way.
Yeah, rule 80.4, high sticking the puck on the power play. This used to be you do that, puck gets dropped outside the zone in an effort to have more offense. It's just a dead puck, and they'll drop it in the zone where the puck was tapped with a high stick. That's all it is. So, you know, that's an advantage for the attacking team on the power play.
Yeah, so feel free to whack it.
Well, that's going to be, if you feel that you need to keep it down, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a 2-minute penalty in my ball hockey league.
Well, it should be.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
Borderline reckless, Michael Smith. All right. Rule 78, I'm sorry. Rule 78.7, the coach's challenge on video replay.
We've talked about this before.
Coach's challenge, no timeout for challenging an offsides now. So if you challenge offsides and lose, you don't lose your timeout. Instead, you get a penalty. If the coach is wrong, you're going to get a 2-minute penalty for delay of the game, and the GMs voted for this rule.
Yeah.
And it was 30-1. I don't know who the one was, but
it'll be a mystery.
We can guess, but 30-1. I don't know if this is going to change the fact that we've seen teams challenging the offsides that much or not.
Yeah,
if it's a goal and you think that it's wrong,
yeah,
maybe I'll change it.
Yeah.
But, man, a goal and you're wrong and now you got to kill off a 2-minute penalty?
It used to, last year, you know, Peters at time used it strategically, a place where he might normally call a timeout. He would just challenge it. You end up getting more time because the officials have to look at, like, an iPod and determine if it was offsides. But, so I think that part of the challenge will be removed to where it's not going to be, like, a strategic timeout. It's going to be you better be sure that this was offside.
Yeah, rule 61, slashing. just as Michael said, stricter enforcement of the rule.
Yeah, because the rule plainly states if you slash a guy on or near his hands, it's a penalty. So they're just calling that. That's all it is.
I mean, this goes back to hooking when
right, exactly.
After 05, 06, they said they're going to call it. It was always a penalty. It's just they really said we're going to call it the way that it's written in the rule book.
Yeah, because when you look back at games before that, like if you look back at the Hurricanes running the 2002 playoffs, guys are just getting mauled as going down the ice. And it's not that that was any different in the rule book. They just never called it. So it's just a change in how they enforce it. And if it's in the rule, I'm of the thinking that if it's in the rule book as a certain way, then call it that way.
Yeah.
You know.
Well.
That's how you're going to stay most consistent, is if you just call it by how it's written.
For many years, though, Michael, I will stand by this fact. That rule book was written in invisible ink because sometimes something was called and then for somebody else it wasn't there.
Right.
So whoever had the magic pen could decipher how they were supposed to call it. Face-off 76.4. Players have to be behind the ice markings. Those are those little L's in the face-off dot. Both feet have to be behind. You have to be square up with your opponent, and then players will find a way to cheat from there instead of – I mean, you saw guys – who are virtually at a 90-degree angle trying to win the faceoff.
Well, and Carrick, actually, when I asked him about the faceoff, he said he wasn't really sure what he should do to not get thrown out, and then that would have resulted in a minor penalty against the Hurricanes because two guys get tossed out, it's a minor penalty. So he said he just kind of stood straight up, and you know, when the other guy missed the puck, he just cleaned it up. So
yeah, it's always the best way. And then rule number 9, uniforms, tuck rule is still in effect. Not that I've seen that call.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so those are the rule changes. All right, Michael.
Nice, a real quick diversion here, but related segue, uniforms. The Hurricanes' new red uniforms I thought looked really good last night, and they played against the Lightning, who are also wearing their home uniforms, which are blue. I thought it looked really good.
Yeah, I like when you have contrasting colors.
Yeah.
You know, when you have red versus blue,
right.
That looks great. But the reason why you can't have the – hate to use the term color rush. The reason why you can't have that is because, you know, well, we want to wear our red jerseys here. Well, we wear red jerseys. Well, you can't have
– right.
You know.
It would have to be
12 guys on the ice wearing red jerseys. It has to be blue versus red. It has to be – well, I can tell you from the NFL, it can't be red versus green.
No, that's bad.
Because people will not like that, so.
Well, and it has to be, too, I think, a mutually agreed upon, like, one-off game. Because with
Montreal, Montreal and Toronto did it a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think they actually did it last year as part of the celebration of 100 years, because that's how people used to wear the jerseys. But it's got to be opposite colors. So, like, red and blue, green and red, you know, although we said that won't work.
Right.
But
and it's got to be a short trip, too, because, you know, hockey equipment is big, it's bulky, and when you have a home and away uniform and it's two completely different sets, you know, that makes for travel nightmares, really. So it would have to be, you know, like a one-off game mutually agreed upon. Yeah. But I thought it looked really sharp. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fine. I would like to see it more. I think that we probably will see it for more of the specialty games, the outdoor games, you know, instead of, I think we'll see more of that. But overall, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Why not? It's something different for the fans to come and see. Like, you get to see, you know, the Tampa's road jerseys or Tampa's home jerseys here when they're on the road, or the Canes' new jerseys, and especially now that Adidas is making the jerseys, why not? If you get the opportunity to, you know, show here, we're going to show you what the home jerseys for everybody looks like this year. But a very valid point brought up here by Michael Smith. The equipment managers, especially the great managers here for the Carolina Hurricanes, Skip Cunningham, Bob Gorman, George Alves, Dave Paul, we don't need to give those guys any more work on the road than what they already have.
No.
That's totally unnecessary. But I'm going to put this out there.
And if I like it, I'll take it.
And if not, send it right back.
Perfect.
That's how this works. But how they're officiating these games in the preseason, Mike, somebody needs to talk to the officials. I get they're trying to do the Pavlov's dog thing here, which is call everything. Anytime you see something that looks like somebody's whacking somebody and you've got a slash, go ahead and call it. But this is a preseason for some guys who are trying to make a hockey club, some young guys who are trying to get out there. In the first two games that you watched, basically are special team scrimmages for two periods. So now some young guy who's trying to make the team is sitting on the bench if he's not part of the penalty killers or part of the power play unit, And now, oh, what, you've been sitting for 6.5 minutes? Go out there. Go impress the general manager and the coach. Go do it. Go make it happen. And I understand the point that they're trying to get across, but, man, it just seems so screwed up that they are so vigilant of doing it in the first few preseason games. Why not ramp up to it and say, look, we're going to let you guys play the first two preseason games like this, but we're going to start calling it more as we get closer to the start of the regular season so we ease into it. Instead of the first game, especially if you're paying money to come watch this, you don't want to pay money and watch, what was it in Tampa? 25 power plays or 25 penalties were called in that game?
36 penalty minutes. Tampa had 10 power plays. All three goals were scored. Both the Hurricanes scored their two goals on the power play. Tampa scored their lone goal on the power play.
And you can hear in Michael's voice how thrilling that was.
Well, it's just penalty. The game is tougher to watch when it's penalty after penalty. But the counterpoint, you know, to what you're saying is, if you don't call it the way it's supposed to be called early, you know, guys aren't gonna understand what's allowed and what's not allowed. So it's
but my point.
So it's a give and take.
We're doing point counterpoint here on this one. My point is the first few games of preseason are the young guys who are trying to make the team or trying to make an impact or trying to say, hey, you know, don't send me back to juniors so quick. Give me another game here. And the first two games are not the guys who are going to be on that opening night roster for the majority of the league. So what you're actually doing is you're handicapping a coaching staff, a front office who wants to look at these players. Like I said, ramp it up. So like the third or fourth game, that's when you say, okay, more regulars are starting to be sprinkled in the lineup. That's when you really call it. Everybody's going to play about 7 preseason games. So if preseason games number 4, 5, 6, and 7 are called at the first rate that we've seen, and then we get to October 7th and the guys haven't learned by then it's the shame on you. But I just feel the first few games, you throw guys into it and you don't know how it's going to be called. You're hurting the product. You're hurting some players' chances. It's just, I think there's a better way to go about doing that. And
well,
you can say that you're going to enforce it more as the preseason moves on.
It's a feeling out process for everybody. But, I mean, for the officials, too, they use preseason as a warm-up for the regular season. So I think everyone needs, you know, that period of adjustment. And it's just the way it is. And I guess, you know, another counterpoint to the evaluation part is that maybe the coaching staff, maybe the front office has a good handle on who they're seeing anyway. And, you know, it's not going to make a difference whether a guy gets 10 minutes or 15 minutes of ice time. But, yeah, I mean, in a way you do feel for the young guys who are stuck, you know, not playing in specialty team situations and then, you know, getting thrown into 5-on-5 play kind of cold. It hadn't been the best of games, but it's preseason, and that's tends to be the trend every year.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I mean, that's preseason for everyone, as we hear. But there are a couple of sports where preseason, trying to get your timing down, really matters. Baseball, you would think baseball it matters, but, you know, those guys are hitting in the cage, all of that in spring training. So they'll have their timing however they want to do that.
Well, and it's not much of like – in baseball, you're not, I guess, playing off of each other as you are. In
basketball, while you might be playing off of the unit that's with you, you know what? Your practice is you can go really hard in practice in basketball.
You can ball out and be good.
Football, timing is important for the offense because
very.
You're not going to hit everybody. You're not going to go live against your own team. So that's why the preseason timing is a big deal and why the first 2 weeks of the NFL we see just flat out stinks offensively.
Because you look at Cam Newton and he didn't get a lot of time in the preseason because of his shoulder, because he didn't throw. And these first 2 weeks of the preseason have been fine, but it's been kind of an adjustment period for him. Sorry to derail this hockey podcast and talk football.
I just want to say, if you want to tell anybody who wasted 3 hours of their life watching the Panthers-Bills game that it's fine –
I mean, you know, it was, what, 9-3? It's a solid 9-6, sorry. 9-6.
No, it was 9-3.
Oh, it was 9-3.
Look, you're trying to put way too much offense on the
board. I don't even remember what the score was.
Exactly.
I just know the Panthers are 2-0, and I'm happy with that.
But hockey is the other sport where the offense, you need to play to get your timing back.
Yeah.
And if you are going to be calling a penalty every minute and a half, you're not going
to
get your
timing
back.
But at least you know what not to do. Come October 7th
they
against the Minnesota Wild.
They should know.
They should, but then you look at the 05-06 season, and guys, you know, we're still taking a lot of penalties.
And then when you got to March, April, May, and June, it wasn't exactly the clutch and grab fest that we saw pre-lockout, but they weren't in the playoffs. They weren't having a whistle every 5 minutes because somebody was obstruction interference or hooking someone. Just saying, Michael.
Yeah. Well,
we're going to do this.
Feel of the game's always talked about, but when you're calling something based on the feel of the game, that's where the inconsistencies start to come out, I think.
All right. Well, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this the whole way.
Yeah, well, I agree. Like I said earlier, if it's written in the rule book, just call it.
All right.
Call the penalty.
My favorite thing, though, is when people would argue, I can't believe they called that. Well, should it not be a rule?
Right. I mean, you can't argue they should call it based on the feel of the game and then say the officials are being inconsistent.
My big thing has always been, if you call it in the first period, call it in the third.
Yeah.
I want consistency in the game. We can say consistency, and I really like how you're saying, no, give me consistency in the rule book.
Yeah.
That way it's not a feel thing. For me, it's the game. If you don't call it in the first period, do not call it in the third period. Or if you do call it in the first period, you better call it in the third period. Don't give me, well, there's 3 minutes left. No, it was a penalty in the game earlier. It should be a penalty here. That's always been my interpretation on how referees should call a game or what they're working for.
I mean, it's just like when you're playing regular season games in October. Those points mean just as much as the points in April. So.
You think to this franchise, the fans listening, they are aware.
Definitely.
My good friend, they are aware. You're going to be going to Saskatoon. Enjoy that. You've gotten a chance to go to many great places in the preseason. You know, you had Sault Ste. Marie and Kraft Hockeyville last year and Marquette. And now this year you get to go to Saskatoon, go to Edmonton, you really get to take in Rogers Center.
Yes. Yeah, we went there last year. Beautiful place. Can't wait to go back.
And let's just put this out there. Derek Ryan, NHL MVP, for the preseason.
Three goals in two games. He's on a tear.
I love this story. I don't think that we can say enough about the Derek Allen Ryan story that's out there. It should be a movie. I think that the Hollywood script might be rejected a few times, but you're a good writer. I'm an idea man. We can put this together.
Yeah, yeah. My people, I don't have people.
Yeah, you do.
No.
I don't have people. I'm the one who's in the Fortress of Solitude where we're now recording from.
Yeah, we recorded in Chuck's studio during the summer.
Proud noise only.
It underwent some renovations, and now we are up in Mike Maniscalco's studio. Which is above section 320.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you ever see him up here, give him a wave. But I don't think you're not up here during games. You're down in the corner.
I'm in the
corner. Doing your job.
They put me in the corner. Everybody puts me in the corner.
Every game.
As opposed to baby. I'm
okay.
Or
in the Zam tunnel where you nearly get run over by ice resurfacing machines.
Should we start a remember when segment? I mean, we could do this. We've got a little bit of time here. But full disclosure,
we've got all afternoon.
As the regular season is about ready to start up in the NHL, the first broadcast that I was a part of, Fox Sports Carolinas, with John Forsland, the wonderful John Forsland, and Trip Tracy, my broadcast partners, I'm in the Zamboni entrance at Joe Louis Arena. My first game is in Detroit at Joe Louis. I didn't go out west with you guys because of timing issues and whatnot. It's a recurring theme. I don't go out west with this hockey team. And Michael Smith is the very first guest that I have on Hurricanes Live.
Very honored, too.
Oh, glad to have you
there. We bookended it with a nice segment in the last game, too.
Which, yes, the awards segment known as the Mikeys should be back this year. So
You'll have to tune in and find out in April.
Yeah.
That's a tease.
We'll see if we can come up with the exact same award. Got to find that microphone wherever it is. But Mike and I are doing the pregame interview because, you know, Michael had seen the road trip and it was basically wrapping up that Western swing that was
there. That's true, because that was a game that was sort of just tacked on to the end of that trip. But we came back to Raleigh just to pick you up.
Yeah.
That's the only reason we came back.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Don't know if you know that. So they come to get me. We're in Detroit. We're in the Zamboni entrance. The Zamboni entrance at Joe Louis Arena was very narrow. And we're on TV, and this exists somewhere. And the Zamboni starts coming, and I'm out in the middle of the Zamboni entrance. Michael's kind of there. And the TV crew's like, you got to move. You got to move. And we narrowly escape being run over by the Zamboni while doing a live interview.
Yeah. You were just holding, because I didn't have a microphone. Nope. So I was, you know, using the microphone you were holding. And we were sort of having to coordinate moving and the microphone staying, you know, close to me and me staying close to the microphone and not getting hit by the Zamboni. And it was chaos.
Here's how this ends up, though. as I realize we might get smooshed by the Zamboni. I've got the microphone in my hand as Mike's giving an answer, and we're starting to, like, you know, do the synchronized swimming to move away, and I start pulling the microphone away from Mike, self-preservation for me, and my producer's in my ear, and I just hear him start screaming, "Put the mic back to Mike! Put the mic back to Mike!" And so he gets that, and then we literally finish that segment underneath the stands.
Yeah,
the
we
Joe
did.
Louis Arena.
That's a lot of people just
literally
didn't see any of that because there was B-roll. Yeah. On the screen.
Ooh.
I think
insider
that's,
term.
Yeah, that's a business term.
Straight business with Michael Smith.
But I think there was a point where the camera did come onto us and you sort of see us shuffling around. Yeah. I think the same thing might have happened in Philadelphia or somewhere, but it's a recurring theme that...
Well, Philly, the door opens up and you do like a two-step back and forth.
And the Nets come by and everything. We're always in the busiest spots.
Yeah, yeah. And I am not exactly built to take up the least amount of space in said areas, but... There you have it. All right,
but
Michael.
You survived. Yeah. That would have been the quickest, you know, debut in TV history. Pre-game and 10 minutes later without a pre-game host.
Yeah. Well, you know, thankfully it all worked out.
Yes,
although,
very thankfully.
Judging by the equipment they had at Joe Louis Arena, I might have been able to withstand that Zamboni knock.
That's true. I cannot wait to go to Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. It looks phenomenal.
Absolutely. So we got to wait for that. But what we don't have to wait for, Michael... Saturday night, the Canes resume the preseason. They take on the Washington Capitals, and the team will make a couple more cuts, and they'll get down to their roster. I believe Bill Peters said that they want to carry 23 guys heading into the regular season opener on October 7th against the Minnesota Wild. That's it. You got anything else you want to add to the return edition of the Canes cast?
I don't think so. What the team has, four preseason games left?
Yep.
So we got Washington.
As of recording this.
Yeah, as of recording this, Washington on Saturday, out to Edmonton, out to Saskatoon, back here next Friday to take on the Capitals in the preseason finale, which I think we should expect to be somewhat of a dress rehearsal for the Hurricanes. That's going to be a lineup that closely resembles a week from then when they host the Minnesota Wild in the home opener.
Yeah, and we will have more info on, Michael said, next week. Some of the players, like Justin Williams, comes back. All he does in his first game back in a Canes uniform, score a goal. He doesn't look rusty at all, and we'll see if the rust is knocked off the rest of the players. And as Mike said, next time they play here at the PNC Arena, it'll be more of a full dress rehearsal. Maybe a couple of guys fighting for a spot, but I expect to see the regular roster too. Thanks for tuning into the Canes cast. We greatly appreciate it. Please leave a comment for us if you like us. Rate us.
Yeah.
And
again, if you like us, only if you like. Only good things.
Only good things.
Please.
If you don't, as Mom said, keep that to yourself.
Yeah.
That's you.
Yeah.
So that'll do it. For the Hurricanes.com web czar, web reporter, traveling man, he's Michael Smith.
And you're Mike Maniscalco, host on Hurricanes.com video and on Fox Sports Carolina's, where you'll be seeing him very soon.
Very soon. That'll do it for the Canes cast. That'll do it for the Canes cast. Easy for me to say. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.